everyone, and welcome to another episode of Divi Nation. Divi Nation is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. So the goal of Divi Nation is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community that you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. In this episode, I'll be sitting down with Brian Garner, founder of StudioPress, the creators of the Genesis framework. He's also a current partner at Rainmaker Platform, who many of you will probably know better under their previous name of Copyblogger Media. So Brian's a great guest on this show for a number of reasons. The primary one being he's been through every stage that a WordPress entrepreneur can go through, seems like anyway, and I'm confident that anyone watching or listening to this episode is going to get a lot out of it. So without any further ado, here is our conversation. Brian, welcome to Divi Nation.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you today?
I'm cold. It's about 15 degrees outside, but Chicago. Chicago weather. Yeah, Chicago. That's how it goes.
That was literally what I was going to ask you is if, because I'm in Ohio, if winter finally caught up with you in Chicago and just got crazy cold in the last couple of days.
You know, 15 isn't crazy cold. Below zero gets crazy cold, and we've had a pretty good winter in terms of snow, so no complaints.
Okay. Have you had a chance to have your Starbucks and McLaughlin today?
Sarah McLaughlin, no. Starbucks, yes.
Okay, that's good. I've always kind of wanted to ask you about that because it seems like a very ever-present, the two ever-present things in all of your profiles from as long as I can remember.
Yeah, no.
So speaking of, you know, just getting your day started with, you know, coffee, Sarah McLaughlin optional, what does your routine look like? This is something I love to ask people just because there's so many different personality types and people types that are in the WordPress community. What do you do to start your day and what does your typical work day look like?
So I can go through what a typical day looks like. Obviously they differ from day to day, just on different things. Typically I'll wake up around 6:15, 6:30 and I'll, 3 or 4 days a week, I go downstairs and run, get that out of the way. After my son goes to school, and, you know, have breakfast. And so I get some stuff, you know, maybe about an hour's worth of work done before I head downstairs to run. And then I get done running, I shower, and then I'll either grab a coffee at that point. And pretty much then I'm just kind of on in the office, meaning my office here at home, till lunchtime. Sometimes I'll run out to lunch. Sometimes I'll just make something here. And then I kind of just do stuff all the way up until 3-4 o'clock when he comes home from school. And then I try my best to kind of shut down and do family time, dinner and hang out, stuff like that. And then usually about 9 o'clock, he goes down and my wife goes into bed and watches TV and does her own thing. And so I go back online for probably another 2 hours or so. And, you know, obviously it depends on the weather and the day and stuff like that. But I'm online a lot, it seems. But a lot of times there's time that I'm not online. So kind of in and out throughout the day. So.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, I don't know why. I just really like hearing about this stuff from guests. It kind of seems like a personal thing, but I don't know. I think it makes getting to know people a little bit better, just know how they tackle their day.
Yeah. You know, once a week, though, I do go out and meet a buddy at Starbucks to work just to get out of the house. Otherwise, I'm here all the time.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, so in terms of throughout the day, you know, I wake up and knock out email just to get it all caught up. And then I do a lot of calls, you know, Skype calls throughout the day, just kind of some are recurring calls, some just pop up and just, you know, strategy calls. Cause right now I'm kind of on the biz dev side of StudioPress. So if I have an idea or get an email from somebody that I want to just say, hey, let's hop on Skype real quick. So I spend a lot of my day on Skype, on email, and then just kind of perusing the internet and the general space to see what's going on. And, ultimately, you know, looking for inspiration on design and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I definitely want to talk to you more about what your role is now and how that's evolved over the years. Mm-hmm. But first, let's kind of turn the clock back a little bit and talk about, I guess, sort of like your WordPress story, kind of starting from the beginning. Mm-hmm. What got you into WordPress in the first place and when was that?
So I think we're going back to about 2006, maybe 2007. And I was a project manager at an architectural firm. And so I was at a desk all day long and taught myself a lot about the computer in general, Microsoft Office and, you know, Explorer, Windows, all that kind of stuff. And I got bored a little bit. And so I decided to look into blogging because I love to write. Mm-hmm. And so I started on Blogger back in the day. Yeah. I had a blogspot address.
Me too.
Like everybody else. And then I kind of, just met a few people online, and one of these guys said, hey, you should check out WordPress. It's a little bit more robust, and you can have a little bit more control over some stuff, and you can, use your own domain and whatnot. And so I basically taught myself WordPress and how to install it, how to start blogging. And as a tinkerer, I wasn't happy with any of the free themes that were available at the time. So I pulled one down. I kind of just went through all the theme files, the CSS mainly, and just kind of went type A and just organized it so that it made sense to me, renamed some classes and things like that so that it would be kind of mine, and so I started with that. And so I started blogging and just kind of writing about personal stuff that was going on, but also kind of chronicling what I was just doing and learning kind of in the WordPress space. And so that was like the very first step moving forward. As part of, do you remember TechnoReady back in the day?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like they had this thing called the TechnoReady Top 100, and it was based on incoming links or something like that. And so I had this this hope that I could break my blog onto the Top 100. And so what I did was create free themes that had links in the bottom back to my site where they could download them, because that was kind of the thing back then. And it was a good way to distribute your name and stuff like that. And so at the very first part of that, it was really more about driving traffic to my blog to read the personal stuff. But then
that's so funny.
people would download the themes, and then they would use my contact form and ask me if I'd be willing to, customize it a little bit or change some colors or fonts. Mm-hmm. And they would pay me. And I was like, well, hey, sure. $50 here, there, kind of became spending money. And then those little tweaky jobs started to become more custom projects, a couple $100, here or there. And it became, pretty good vacation money at the time. And then a real estate agent out of Boston came and asked me to do a theme for him, or, a design for him. And I did something that was kind of what I thought was really pushing the limits of WordPress at the time. And he came back and said, hey, this is great. I love it. It's not what I'm looking for. Can we go a little bit simpler? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so I dumbed it down a little bit and did something totally different. And he got happy with that. And so
had this thing on your hands, right?
This thing on my hands that I was really, really proud of. And so went on my blog and figured, I'd ask the audience, would you buy a premium WordPress theme? And I
argued that wasn't really even a big thing back then, right?
It may not even have been ever a thing at that point. That may have really been the naming of it, just the whole market as a whole. And so on my blog, I set up, here's a link to a demo I did for this guy. Would anybody buy a premium WordPress theme? And I got hundreds of comments. And that was kind of the very first eye-opening experience in terms of the viability of selling within WordPress.
Oh, wow. So that very well may have been the kind of the birth of the premium theme market. What year was that?
I want to say it was 2007.
Okay.
Which is hard to believe that we're, now on 9 years, almost 10. So
yeah, it's bonkers.
That's crazy.
I find it really interesting, just kind of almost as a side note here, that you got started in all this. I mean, we're going to get into StudioPress and Genesis and Rainmaker and all that, but you got started just as a blogger because you say that in all of your, bios that you're a writer and a designer. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like you just want to blog and all this other stuff just kind of happened by accident and took over your life?
It did. And I'm glad it did, though, because I needed something more than I was looking for something because I was bored with where I was at, just in life, at my job and whatever. And so I thought writing would be a kind of a therapeutic way to get it out. Obviously, I needed way much more than that. And I'm glad it went where it did because it completely changed my life to a point where I was able to quit my job. My wife was able to quit her job. I built a seven-figure business and started to employ other people who could do the same thing. And so there was an enablement there with other people. And then we merged it into Copyblogger, and now we've got 60 people. So it's amazing how that type of stuff works.
That's awesome. Well, let's talk about those businesses. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, I guess you did kind of just tell us about the birth of StudioPress, but tell us about StudioPress and Genesis and how that came to be sort of, I guess, the benchmark for quite a long time for, not just premium WordPress themes, but also theme frameworks and that whole market.
So the very original theme that I created was called Revolution. And back in the day, that's what I called it because I didn't know any better. I was like, that would be a fun name, right? Let's make a revolution in WordPress, right? And so that was called Revolution. And about a year or year and a half into it, I got a cease and desist letter from a company in the United Kingdom who did some sort of software called Revolution, and they said it was a confusing thing. And so I had to bring that to my IP lawyer and ask him if they have grounds for this. And he said, you know, you could probably fight it. You'd probably win, but you probably don't want to. And at the time I was doing really good money and I was kind of afraid, what should I do here? You know, I don't want to change a name and completely blow my income. But I, in the end, I decided it was the smarter way to go. So I went ahead and researched different names, started thinking of things, and StudioPress was, I think it was a premium domain. I probably bought it for $5,000 or something, but I thought it was a great name. And so, so I went after it, and then I renamed Revolution to StudioPress, and that was kind of the iteration of like the next step. Mm. Big lesson learned in terms of, you know, branding and business and starting something up. Always research what you do before you do it. But again, back in the day, I had no idea what I was doing. So so StudioPress came about, and you know, 2 or 3 years kind of into that, I decided that I was tired of building themes that were individual. Mm-hmm. A lot of the code base had been sharing, you know, a lot of the themes had been sharing code base. And so at the time, Nathan Rice, who is now our developer, one of our developers at Rainmaker, I reached out to him and I said, hey, look, man, like, here's like an idea I have. You know, most of our themes share the same code base. Is there a way to kind of set up a theme to where it's basically like, I use the iPhone and the iPhone cover as an example, or, mm-hmm. you know, it'd be paint job in a car, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you have an engine and then the engine is shared across all of the themes. And then just, the, you know, the theme can be changed via CSS or maybe some custom functions to look and function differently. And so that was kind of the first pitch to him of what Genesis became. And he says, yeah, you know, at the time Thesis was out there, which was sort of kind of a framework, sort of not. Mm-hmm. But Nathan knew of a way to construct it to where we could pull off what I was looking for, because got to a point where, you know, WordPress would update their, you know, custom header function, and then I'd have to take that and go apply that to you know, 15 different themes.
The board and
I was like, there's got to be an easier way. And so so that was the first iteration of Genesis. And obviously, it's evolved since then. I think we just celebrated our 5-year anniversary, which is crazy.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. So but it's still going strong.
That's really cool. So what was the journey from creating Genesis and launching it? I mean, it became a big success. I know you had, maybe still do have, I don't know exactly what the current competition is like on the affiliate front, but I know for a long time, like, everybody was pumping Genesis, like, you got it, this is it, this is the last theme you'll need, et cetera, et cetera. So what, you know, what was the rise of Genesis like, and what did joining Rainmaker, who was then Copyblogger, how did that come about?
So when we created Genesis, it was basically StudioPress, me, Nathan, and a couple of people, and it was 4 or 5 of us that kind of made up the StudioPress team.
Sure.
At the same time, Brian Clark was a partner with Chris Pearson over at DIY Themes, and they had Thesis, and so they were direct competitors. Chris and Brian ultimately dissolved their relationship over a number of different things, which you can Google about. Okay. And so Brian reached out to me. So this was maybe a few months after Genesis had come out and it was catching some traction and whatnot. And so Brian reached out and said, look, Chris and I are going to be parting ways, and I wanted to know if you wanted to come together and be a partner with me. And so, yeah, I said, yeah, sure. I mean, I knew who he was and I thought it was.
And he had already built Copyblogger up to be this big presence, correct? At that time?
At the time, Copyblogger was just the blog, and he was selling Thesis through the blog. Gotcha. And they were doing quite well. But they had their differences. And so they went their separate ways. And so when Brian came to me, I realized it was a big opportunity for me to take the next step and to kind of get back into like the top level. Cause I no longer had to compete against him. I could compete with him. And I knew the size and the audience he had at Copyblogger. And I was like, this is a great opportunity. Yeah. So I told him yes. And shortly thereafter, he came back and said, hey, look, I've got a couple other people that, you know, I have these, what we would call a joint venture or partnership with, and they are people who, you know, have designed or developed different pieces of what I think could be a really big platform, or, you know, kind of all in one thing, which is ultimately now Rainmaker. And so he said, you know, if I bring you in on the theme side, and, you know, this guy in from the SEO side, and this guy in from kind of the landing page conversion side, you know, what are your thoughts on forming a company around this and totally going big? And I was like, yeah, sure. So, you know, we all flew out to Denver and sat down, and about 45 minutes into meeting four people I had never met before, we decided to form the company, which became Copyblogger Media. And so we had pieces and parts of all of it. It started out with Genesis. There was Scribe, which is our SEO software. Mm-hmm. We had a landing page software called Premise, which we kind of sold all a la carte and in individual lines of business. Yep. Shortly after we formed the company and started doing that is when we came up with Synthesis, which was the hosting component of it. And once that was up and running and we kind of pulled all the teams together is when we started to take all of that and kind of build it into what's now Rainmaker, the platform.
Awesome. Awesome. And that took, so that was, if I remember correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because mm-hmm. I'm very well maybe, but the Copyblogger Media venture happened around 2012?
So Copyblogger Media formed in, so we're going to be 6 years, September 2010.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we're five, little over 5.5 years old right now as a company.
How many years to get from selling everything a la carte to putting it together into the platform you have now?
3 to 4.
3-4 years?
I think we're coming up on like year two of Rainmaker. The first year was a very much like a pilot beta kind of situation. So, so 3-4 years, 3 years, something like that. Between 3 and 4 years before we got to that point.
So I guess the obvious question now is, how's it going?
It's going really well. Ironically, we've built Rainmaker. It's a very profitable line of business. Mm-hmm. We still have a lot of stuff that we're adding to it, a lot of features that folks are asking for, and just, you know, things take time to iterate into a platform. You can't just take everything and all at once put it in there. So Rainmaker, the platform is working really well. We have a podcast network that goes alongside mm-hmm. that at rainmaker.fm.
We featured some of your podcast episodes on shows of Divination in season 1, by the way.
There we go. It's a good thing. I've been in and out of our podcast world, and I think I'm heading back into it. So that's going to be a fun thing for me. But, so we've got Rainmaker, the platform that's going really well. Studio Press, we just came out with a redesign, and we're really making a big push this year to do a bunch of cool things. For us, theme sales have never been better. So it's crazy how even, you know, 5 years after the company formed, 9 years after this all started, people are still buying premium WordPress themes.
So what is that? Do you think, what do you think that says for, I guess, WordPress as a whole? I mean, it doesn't really seem to be slowing down all that much.
All the articles that talk about how WordPress is powering 25% of the internet mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. But for us, you know, I think Genesis was really wise because it was sort of a kind of a customer retention thing mm-hmm. where people trust the platform. And what we can do then is, as we come out with new themes, they can change their themes every 6 months or a year or 2 years. And so they come back as a customer again because mm-hmm. they're on Genesis. They like the functions and features that Genesis as a framework has, and they just want to update the look of their site, which they can very easily do by way of a theme. So it's repeat customer type of thing.
And so many times throughout your story so far, you've said, you know, I didn't know at the time that this was going to be the case. I mean, you had a couple bad breaks with the name, for instance, but you know, it seems like you also had a couple really, really good breaks, like this business model that you're describing right now, which is, encouraging people to stay with your platform or stay with your theme. How many good breaks did you catch that you were completely unaware of at the time?
I mean, the most obvious one, and I've done interviews, you know, about the accidental entrepreneur, that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Was just being at the right place in the right time, doing the right thing and saying the right thing and asking the right thing back when this all started. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't go out to create a premium WordPress theme market. I did not certainly go out to, I had no idea that it would sell, you know, tens of millions of dollars in themes. It was all the fact that I just was at the right place at the right time. And sometimes in building a business and the whole entrepreneurial journey, it is about luck. And for me, you know, I was way more lucky than I was good back then because, but then again, I had very quickly competition once word got out that you could sell themes and make lots of money. So there was competition. So to combat that luck, I had to really hustle and really learn and really spread my wings quickly so that I can kind of stay afloat.
Absolutely. I think that might be a good segue into something that you and I talked about in the pre-interview, which was this kind of recurring theme in your story of you use the term breaking through the wall, something that you've had to do over and over again. Can you just tell us briefly, what does breaking through the wall mean to you? And where does that kind of metaphor come from?
So So for me, it comes from running. I'm a runner. I'm a long distance runner. And so typically when you hear about the wall, it's in the context of people running a marathon. It usually happens between mile 17 through 20-ish of the 26 miles, where you get to the point where you're just completely done, completely spent. And mentally, you just want to throw in the towel, physically too. And so for me, what it came down to is, and it's a great metaphor for whether it's, you know, exercise or building a business or pretty much anything, there's always going to be a point where, you know, it's too hard or, you know, you can't get through it. You're not conditioned. You're not seasoned. You don't have the tools to get through, and you have an option. Either you stop, you throw in the towel, or you try to fight through it. Maybe it means you slow down so that you can kind of get through it and then you kind of recover and then you get to a point where you'll finish. And so, you know, for me, there's just been a number of things along the way that really has been that, which is I've come to the point where I was like, I'm done. This isn't working. It's too much. I can't handle it. It'd be easier to just not move forward. And that's really where it comes down to. And just as a runner, it's, you know, it just reinforces me even on a running standpoint. I ran a 20 miler for the first time a year and a half ago, and I had never experienced the wall when it came to running before. And as a runner who's not prepared to go through the wall, it's really weird because it's kind of like this euphoric psychedelic feeling where you're like, oh my God, I'm in the wall. Like, I'm in the heart of the hurricane. This is really strange. And so when I was running through it, I was like, I had to stop for a minute and almost enjoy the fact that I was finally getting to a point. I had pushed myself far enough, you know, to experience what the wall really was.
That's really cool. So, what are some, and can you get specific at all? What is an experience in your past or an instance in your past, particularly with WordPress? Obviously you don't have to get super personal. But what is one instance in which you had to confront and work through or break through a wall?
So as StudioPress was growing, by nature, I'm a doer and I like to do everything and handle everything. I like control. And so it's hard for me to delegate. It's been easier because I've seen the fruits of what that does. So there was, I can't remember how many years ago, but my wife and I were on Friday night, we were participating in a weekend event called the Breast Cancer 3-Day. And so it's a 60-mile walk over the course of 3 days. And so we were sitting in a tent on Friday night after I had just walked 20 miles in probably 85-degree heat. And I had my phone open and I had so many things. I was running StudioPress. I was handling support. I was doing email, all that kind of stuff. And it got to a point where I was sitting in the middle of this tent and I was activating forum accounts on my phone because no one else was there. It was like the first time I was like, I can't do this, man. Like, I got to hire somebody. This is ridiculous. I'm stressed out. It's Friday night. I'm supposed to be doing something fun and I'm bogged down. And so that was like the first iteration of that. The second one happened not too long after that. I was in New Mexico with Corey Miller of iThemes. And we were out in the middle of nowhere and we had just skied and I got food poisoning and I popped open my computer and I had like 100 emails. Oh, no. And I had like another meltdown where I was like, I can't do it. Like this is too much responsibility. I got 100 people asking me things. And I was like, and I shut my computer. I was like, I don't even know what to do anymore. Cause, and so like, there's two of those where it was like, okay, I could either just say it's over, you know, close the doors or fight through that and kind of learn the hard way. Like, how do you grow a business? How do you take steps and take risks and chances? And how do you put your faith and trust in people who you really don't know? Because a lot of times they're just people you meet online. I mean, you don't really know who they are. They're not your best friends from down the street. So, you know, so there's probably the two times where I've come to that point. Now, there was a third time, though, and this is probably the last time it's happened. Maybe about a year or so into after we formed the company at Copyblogger, we were still hustling all as partners and really doing a lot of the stuff. And we were in Boulder having a partner meeting and I totally, the first night we were there, I just broke down. I said, look, I'm working like 80 hours. Like I almost hate all of this. It's so much work. I'm so stressed out. It's not fun. And so like, there was like the third time and that was the last time I think I've had a close to a breakdown over work. And, you know, since then we've grown and we've, you know, the big thing is that we've been able to bring in mid-level management who's basically come in and taken over all of the daily things that we were doing. So the partners are more kind of, we still work all the time, but it's not as day to day, got to get this and that done. It's more of kind of a kind of creative position we're all in. And so, and that's been really helpful.
That's awesome. It sounds like, you know, in each instance to a certain extent, there was just a level of, almost fear of growth that you had to overcome because it wasn't necessarily that you didn't have the resources to hire someone on. It was more like you didn't have the trust, or you didn't have the vision, or didn't have some element that was mm-hmm. almost mental keeping you from making the decision that was going to be best for you.
Is yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah.
And so what helped you kind of turn that mental corner to see the, you know, your way to making those decisions?
It was the reality that I didn't want to go back to having breakdowns. Like it got to the point where I was like, I would go through them and I would be like, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about money. You know, I was doing really good revenue back then. It was all about trust. And just, you know, after the first of the three times it's happened, you know, when you learn that you can trust somebody with something and they do it responsibly and a lot of times better than you, then it opens up like the next time you're in that position to grow a little bit more where you're like, okay, I put my trust in somebody and it was rewarded handsomely. Like I could sleep at night. I could, you know, take time off and it's not a big deal. And so once you start to kind of get, and I almost to a point now where I feel almost too comfortable in where I'm at, but that's the fruit of 9 years of hard work.
That's awesome. Well, that was actually going to be part of my next question is, you know, on a scale from just had a big breakthrough to I'm hoping a breakthrough happens soon because I can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. Where would you say you are at this moment?
On a zero to 10, you know, 10 being total breakdown, zero being as chill as it gets. Mm-hmm. I'm probably like a 2.
Oh, wow. So you're in a great place.
I'm in a really great place right now. And again, it's because of the fact that we've painstakingly gotten through so much of our stuff. And really what it comes down to is as we've grown as a company, Tony Clark, who's our COO, he really is a process guy. And he's really built the formation of our company very, very well in terms of, you know, bringing people in, raising them up, taking over responsibilities. And so for me, like, I think a lot of why I'm at where I'm at is twofold. One, I've been able to identify people within our community who could do the things that I was doing. For instance, Lauren Mankey, who is now basically head of Studio Press. And that in itself was a challenge to kind of turn that over.
That was your baby.
it was my baby and it still is my baby. and I think it will always be my baby. But, you know, it gets to a point where you get too big for your britches and you have to, you need help. And that's a good point when you're there because there's a reason you're there. And it's because you're doing a lot of sales or a lot of revenue and you just have a lot of stuff happening.
Well, it seems like one of the things that has come out of your breakthroughs, your kind of a realization that you had was this concept of a no sidebar. It's a philosophy that I think anyone who follows you online is probably aware that you adhere to. And you consider this to be sort of a life and design philosophy. Can you tell us what no sidebar means?
So for me, no sidebar really started with my agitation and frustration of literally people loading their sidebars up with stuff they think they need to have. As a designer and a guy who owns a blog, and you know, I had my own personal blog with the sidebar, I had all that stuff, and I was always pretty good with what was in there, but I would go and look for design inspiration or just want to read content. And I was like, man, like people have Instagram widgets, Facebook, like all the stuff that people say, oh, you should put this in your sidebar. I'm like, why? It completely takes away from the experience of the web. And I think it's actually in some cases, in moderation, it's fine, right?
Sure.
You know, but these are people who like had, you know, like this much post and like their sidebar would just go on
all
and
the
on
way
on.
Down the page.
I can't even get to the footer because you have everything in your sidebar. And so for me, it was like, okay, I'm going to adopt this philosophy on my own site because I don't, first of all, I need my own site to generate revenue. So it was a little bit easier to just pull it off and say, I'm just going to write content, put an email sign up at the bottom, social icons below that, and that's going to be it, right? And so like I'm like, okay, breath of fresh air, at least for my own site and for the visitors that are, you know, reading my stuff. And so I started to kind of take that and apply that to just, you know, the ideology behind it is what gets in the way of what you want to do. And in the web, it was removing the sidebar, you know, but in our own life, there's other things that we do, busy schedules and stuff like that. And this kind of delves more into the minimalism and simple living element of it, which is kind of the non-literal version of no sidebar.
Yeah.
And so, you know, where that bridge came was when I decided to reach out to Joshua Becker, who is a really good friend of mine. He runs a blog called Becoming Minimalist. And at the time, I think I poached him because he was on Thesis and I knew he had a big audience. And so I said, hey, I'd be happy to redesign this and put this on Genesis for you. Not thinking he would take me up on it. And like 10 minutes later, he sent me an email and said, yeah, that'd be great. Would you do it? And so we redesigned his site. We took the sidebar out of his site. Which was a big risk because that's where he sold his books.
Sure, yeah.
And so we very intentionally placed this book placement in an author box below the content, which in our eyes was more of a natural you read the post, you like what he says, and then you get pitched the book rather than sure. putting it top and center. And so at that point, I was like, I liked the idea of no sidebar. And
did it work, I guess, is the...
It didn't not work. Okay. And so after we did it, it's funny, after we did it, a couple of weeks later, I sent him an email. I'm like, look, I'm totally freaking out here. You got to tell me, are your book sales fine? Like, yeah. I assume you would have told me if it crashed, right? Yeah. He's like, dude, don't worry. It's all good. Everything's fine. And so, you know, he's had a lot of things go on in his life. So it's hard to really determine, you know, did it spike sales? Did it increase sales and all that? But the bottom line is that it didn't hurt sales, which is all I needed to hear at that point.
That's fantastic. So what are some other areas, I guess, maybe in your life that you've adopted the no sidebar mentality and it's bared good fruit. It's been beneficial.
You know, a lot of it has to do with just self-induced workaholicism, if that's even a word. Like I would literally, like my work days would be 50, 60 hours. And that time spent on the computer was a sidebar into the things that I would want to do. Mm. You know, it took away from my running. It took away from family. And so again, it was one of those, hey, and it's kind of like the weight you put on during the holidays, right? You don't just all of a sudden gain 30 pounds, but just little by little out of just bad habits and things like that, it just gets to a point where you realize, hey, it's time to lose weight. And so for me, it was just like, you know, even when I would go out to run, I would want to run for 40 minutes, but I would cut it at 30 because I wanted to get back to work. And just all these little things like that, where it was just like, you know, it shouldn't be this way. We got to remove the things that get in the way of what we want to do or where we want to go, because we only have this life once. And I could go into a completely philosophical, you know, conversation just about that and, you know, how much time we have on earth and all of that stuff. But the reality is, you know, I just, it became a fun, you know, term in my mind. I heard Brian Clark on a Rainmaker podcast. He was doing mention no sidebar when in the context of landing pages. And when he said that, and I'd already been thinking about it, I was like, nosidebar.com. I'm like, there's a blog about this waiting to happen, right?
Yeah.
So I went and researched and the domain was available. All the socials were available. And 15 minutes after I'd heard that from him, I had it all. And I was like, okay,
this is it.
Start a movement and use all of our tools doing it so that it could kind of help sell it. And it's been an incredibly fun project to do.
That's awesome. Would you say, I mean, it sounds like this is something that you think applies pretty generally to people. Would you encourage, you know, just everybody to do this, or is this something that only certain types of people would really thrive with?
I think it looks differently for everybody. Minimalism as a whole looks differently from everybody. It's more of a mindset than it is a set of rules sure. of, you know, so
you must have this or not have this, or your amount of possession stops here or whatever.
Total. Yeah. I mean, Studio Press has a sidebar, Copyblogger has a sidebar. I think in certain contexts, sidebars are fine. I think it's just more the intentionalness of looking inward, or externally, like on a website, and just really challenging yourself. What's there, what, you know, why it's there, why it shouldn't be there. And so it looks differently for everybody. There's no blanket manual that you should do X, you should have 10 pairs of clothes, you know, things like that. Yeah. I think it's just more of an internal thing on, you know, is there anything that causes anxiety or gets in the way of things? And if there is, how can you remove them?
Sounds good. So at the end of each episode, because we're getting close to the end on time here, I like to end each episode of Divination with a solid takeaway thought, a parting thought. We've covered a lot of ground today between your WordPress story, the breaking through the wall theme, no sidebar. So I'd like to say, or I'd like to ask you, you know, if there's one thing that you've taken away or that you would like people to take away from your story, what would that be?
You know, I could easily just fall back on the wall thing, but as an entrepreneur and a guy who's into design and strategy and all of that kind of thing, those who listen to the show are probably people who have businesses in and around WordPress or run their own business on top of WordPress in terms of, you know, completely unrelated, but they use the software. Whatever it is, and it's the great quote from Wayne Gretzky, which is, you know, a good hockey player skates to where the puck is and a great one skates to where it's going to be. And so I really just challenge everybody, because there's so much, you know, imitation going on out there. So many people not mocking, you know what I mean? Like just doing everything that is already being done. And I challenge myself on a daily basis. It's really hard at times to really try to be innovative and pioneering, whether it's in design, whether it's in real estate or whatever. You know, really the takeaway is to just push yourself to not be satisfied with, you know, okay, or what someone else is doing, and really just try to be, and maybe that's what got me to where I'm at, because nobody was selling WordPress themes, but I asked the question, you know, and so the question I have for others is, you know, what's that question in your life? And where could that question, if answered the right way, where can it take you?
Fantastic. That sounds like a great parting thought. Brian, thank you so much for joining me on Divi Nation.
Yeah, thank you for asking. It's been a pleasure. I know it's an interesting, it was an interesting conversation I had in my head. I was like, wow, this is technically a competitor asking me to be on the show. But I'm like, there's so much co-competition going on. Mm-hmm. I know it's more than just who's selling themes and all of that. And so it's an ecosystem as a whole. And I had no problem coming on, and I'm thankful for the opportunity.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I know there's just so much to learn from each other as people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what WordPress, aside from the commercial aspect of it, yep. is really all about, is the openness, the sharing, learning from each other and with each other. And I think having you and other big players in the WordPress community is only going to be a positive to have on the show and share your thoughts with our community.
Well, it's open source at its best, right?
Absolutely.
As always, I just want to give another big thank you to our guest, Brian Garner, for coming on the show and sharing his story with all of us. So Brian's a great communicator, and I think he's got so much to share with anybody using WordPress in just about any capacity, whether you're blogging, starting a company, creating themes and plugins, building websites for others. Something in here is probably going to be really valuable to you. So if you have any questions based on the stuff that we talked about in this episode, feel free to leave them in the comments on the blog. I'll share this episode, that link with him, ask Brian to come by and field any questions that he's able to at the time. Anything that he doesn't get to, I will do my best to answer. And if I can't answer it right away, we'll commit another episode of the podcast to it, a new blog post, or at the very least, point you in the right direction. So thanks everyone for tuning in. That's all for this episode. I'll be around the community. You can always reach out to me through Twitter, Facebook, and the blog comments, however you want. Email at podcast@eleganttheme.com. And as always, we will be back next week with another episode of Divi Nation. See you then.